When they came into the room of the ancient building that they'd restored and made habitable, Taita was at the hearth stirring the contents of a pot upon the coals. He looked up at Mintaka as she stood in the open doorway with the last light of the day behind her. Her skirt was still damp where she'd washed it in the scanty waters of the well, and it clung to her thighs.
"I'm sorry we're so late back, Taita," she said shyly.
"We followed the gazelle out into the desert." She'd never apologized for their late return before, and Taita looked up at the two of them. Nefa was hovering over her with a soft, dazed expression. The emanation of their love was so strong that it seemed to form a shimmering aura around them, and Taita could almost smell it in the air, like the fragrance of a wildflower. So what was inevitable had happened at last, he mused. The only wonder was that it took so long. He grunted, noncommittal. It's evident that you did not catch up with them. Did they run too fast, or were you distracted? They stood awkwardly, covered with confusion and guilt, knowing that to him they were transparent. Taita turned back to the cooking pot. At least there's one provider among us. I've been able to snare a brace of wild pigeon. We need not go hungry to bed. The days that followed passed for the two of them in a golden haze of delight. They thought they were being subtle and discreet in Taita's presence, trying to keep their eyes off each other, and touching only when they thought he was not looking. Mintaka had made a boudoir for herself in a bare cell that led off the main living room of their quarters. Each night, Nefer waited until Taita was snoring softly, before he surreptitiously rose and crept to her sleeping mat in this little room. Each morning she would rouse him long before dawn, and send him back to his own mat in the main room when they thought Taita was still sleeping. On the third morning, Taita announced inscrutably, "It seems that these rooms are inhabited by rats or other strange creatures. I'm kept from sleeping by their scurrying and whispering." They both looked stricken, and he went on, "I've found more tranquil accommodation." He moved his own sleeping mat and possessions to a small ruin across the square, and to these he retired every evening after they'd eaten dinner together. During the days the lovers wandered out into the desert to pass their time in talking, making love, and forming a thousand plans for the future, deciding when and how they might marry, how many sons and how many daughters she would bear him, and finding names for each. They were so lost in each other that they forgot the world that lay beyond the lonely desert spaces, until one morning, when they left the ruined city before dawn, carrying a coil of rope and two oil lamps, determined to explore the ancient tombs more thoroughly. By a circuitous route, they reached the top of the cliff, where they sat down to catch their breath and watch the magnificent spectacle of the dawn breaking over the blue, secret hills. "Look!" cried Mintaka suddenly, starting out of his arms and pointing back towards the west along the old trade route that led down into Egypt. Nefer jumped up, and they gazed down the valley at the strange caravan coming towards them. There were five ramshackle vehicles leading, followed by a straggling column of humanity. "There must be 100 men at least," Mintaka exclaimed. "Who can they be?"
"I don't know," Nefer admitted grimly. "But I want you to run back and warn Taita of their approach while I go and spy on them." She did not argue, but set off immediately for Galala, racing down the back slope of the hills, leaping from rock to rock with the agility of a wild ibex. Nefer cached the rope and the lamps, then restrung his bow and checked the arrows in his quiver, before creeping along the crest of the hills, keeping off the skyline and out of sight, until he reached a point from which he could look down on the slow-moving caravan. It was a sorry spectacle. As it came closer, Nefer saw that the first two vehicles were knocked-out fighting chariots, drawn by thin, overworked horses. They were designed to carry two men, but each contained four or five. Behind them came an assortment of wagons and carts in no better case than the leading chariots.
never saw that they were laden with sick or wounded men, huddled miserably together, or lying on makeshift litters. Behind the wagon straggled a long file of walking men, some hobbling along on crutches or leaning on staffs. Others carried litters, on which lay other sick or wounded figures. In the name of Horus, they looked like fugitives from a battlefield, Nefer muttered as he strained his eyes to make out the features of the men in the leading chariot. Suddenly, he stood up from behind the rock that had hidden him and shouted with excitement, "Mirren!" He had at last recognized the tall figure who held the reins of the first chariot. Mirren pulled up the horses and shaded his eyes to stare into the eye of the rising sun. Then he too shouted and waved as he saw Nefer on the skyline. Nefer ran down the slope, slipping and sliding in the loose scree, and he and Mirren embraced, laughing and both speaking at once. "Where have you been?" "Oh, where am Intarka and Taita?" Then Hilto was hurrying to Nefer and making loyal salutations. Behind him crowded the host of exhausted and wounded men. Their faces were drawn and gaunt, and blood and pus had soaked through their dirty bandages and dried to a crust. Even the men in the wagons and on the litters, who were too far gone to stand, lifted themselves to stare in awe at Nefer. With a quick appraisal, Nefer could see that these were warriors, but warriors beaten in battle, their bodies and spirits broken. After Hilto had greeted Nefer, he turned back to them and shouted, "It is even as I promised you! Here before you stands your true Pharaoh, Nefer-Seti. Pharaoh is not dead. Pharaoh lives." They were silent and apathetic, sick and demoralized. They stared at Nefer uncertainly. "Your Majesty," Hilto whispered to him, "please stand on this rock so that they may have a clear view of you." Nefer sprang up onto it and surveyed them with interest. They stared back at him in silence. Most had never laid eyes on their king before. Even the few who had seen him in formal palace processions had done so from a distance. Then he'd been a doll-like figure, covered from throat to foot in splendid robes and jewels, his face a white mask of make-up, sitting stiffly on the royal carriage drawn by the white bullocks. They could not reconcile that remote, unnatural figure with this strapping young man, virile and hard-looking, his face tanned by the sun, and his expression alive and alert. He was not the child Pharaoh they'd known by reputation alone. While they still stared without comprehension, or exchanged dubious glances, another figure seemed to materialize out of the air. Like a djinn, he appeared beside Nefer on the rock. This one they knew well, both by repute and by sight. "'Tis Taita the warlock!" they breathed with awe. "I know what you have suffered," Taita told them in a voice that carried clearly to every ear, even to the sick and wounded on the wagons. "I know what price you have paid to resist the tyranny of the assassins and usurpers. I know that you have come here to find if your true king still lives." They murmured in agreement, and suddenly Nefer knew now who they were. These were some of the survivors from the rebellion against Narja and Trok. Where Hilto had found them was a mystery, but these shattered remnants had once been fighting troopers, elite charioteers and warriors. "This is where it begins," Taita said softly at his side. "Hilto has brought you the seeds of your future legions. Speak to them." Nefer surveyed them a moment longer, standing proud and tall before them. He picked out a man in the ranks who was older than the others, with the first snows in his hair. His eyes were sharp and his expression intelligent. Despite his rags and half-starved body, he had the air of authority and command. "Who are you, soldier? What's your rank and your regiment?" The man lifted his head and squared his gaunt shoulders. "I am Shabako,
best of 10,000, adept of the Red Road, commander of the centre of the Mut Regiment. A lion of a man, Nefer thought, but said only, I greet you, Shabako. He lifted the skirt of his chiton and exposed the tattooed cartouche upon his thigh. I am Nefer Seti, the true pharaoh of Upper and Lower Egypt. A sigh and a hum went through the scarecrow ranks when they recognized the royal cartouche. As one man they threw themselves to the earth in obeisance. Bakher, divine one, beloved of the gods. We are your loyal subjects, Pharaoh. Intercede for us with the gods. Mintaka had come with Taita and now stood below him. Nefer reached down and took her hand. He lifted her onto the rock beside him. I give you the Princess Royal, Mintaka of the House of Apepi. Mintaka, who will be my queen and your sovereign lady. They greeted her with another shout of acclamation. Hilto and Shabako will command you, Nefer decreed. For the time being, Galala will be our base, until we return victoriously to Thebes and Avaris. They rose to their feet, even the gravely wounded attempting to climb from their litters, and they cheered him. Their voices were thin and almost lost in the great silences of the desert, but the sound filled Nefer with pride and renewed his determination and resolve. He climbed up into the leading chariot, took the reins from Merin, and led his little raggle-taggle army down into his ruined capital city.